Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, December 12, 2019. Teacher of the Week, right at home. If she wasn't in the line of work she's in, Westview Elementary's Lisa Nguyen wouldn't know what to do with herself. This is my 19th year of teaching first grade. Just like the movie Forrest Gump, students are like a box of chocolate. You never know what you're going to get. You have to love chocolate, and I love teaching, says the News Gazette's 10th Teacher of the Week in the 2019-20 school year. My favorite teacher was my dad. In Vietnam, he was a math teacher. I remember bringing home geometry homework, and he would use all the tools necessary to get me to understand the concepts. Sometimes I would just sit back and nod my head, even when I had no clue what he was talking about. But what I did learn from him is that a passionate and dedicated teacher is what every child deserves. I find my work important because it's an investment in the future. Everyone needs teachers, regardless of their future profession. I am helping kids grow academically as well as build character. When it comes to my most fulfilling moment on the job, this is a difficult one because there are so many moments. The moment a student learns something for the first time, the moment a child comforts another child by patting him or her on the shoulder, the moment a student perseveres when something is difficult, the moment a student runs back to you at the end of the day because he or she forgot to give you a hug. These are the moments that keep teachers going. I became a teacher because I enjoy working with kids. I started tutoring in college. It was a rewarding experience to know that my efforts helped kids learn something new and become confident in their abilities. I'm passionate about family. My parents are my first teachers. My siblings are my best friends. My husband is my rock. They give me enough love and support to pass on to my students and my own son. In a sidebar, Class Act, Westview Principal Nick Sword says, "She not only teaches academics, but she also teaches students how to be good to each other. Lisa is innovative when it comes to her teaching style and how she approaches kids. She meets them at their academic level and grows her students each and every year. Lisa creates a learning environment that is warm, caring, and inviting for students." And we have Jim Dye's column, Calm Madigan at Center of Fed's Investigative Storm. The hits just keep on coming, at least from news media outlets. Whether and where they will land in terms of criminal indictments remains to be seen. Some big shots, Chicago Alderman Ed Burke, State Senator Martin Sandoval, to name just two, already have been targeted. There will be more, but the major question in most people's minds in Illinois is this: where does Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan stand in the ongoing and extensive criminal investigations being conducted by the FBI? As stated earlier, the hits continue. Here's an example from a story published Wednesday in The Hill. Sources who have been interviewed by federal agents told The Hill that authorities are also looking into the relationships between several small towns around Chicago and people in Madigan's orbit. In September, the FBI raided government offices in McCook, Lyons, Schiller Park, and Summit, all towns in Sandoval's state Senate district. The Hill story states all four towns have insurance contracts with Mesereau Insurance Services, a Chicago-based company that employs Andrew Madigan, the speaker's son. The FBI wants to know, The Hill reported, whether the towns were told to sign contracts with Madigan's son's firm in exchange for legislative favors in Springfield. Last week, the Chicago Tribune reported that FBI agents conducting interviews were asking about Madigan himself. The sources, all of whom requested anonymity, said FBI agents and prosecutors asked about connections between Commonwealth Edison lobbyists and Madigan, lobbyists giving contracts to people tied to the speaker, and city, state, and suburban government jobs held by his associates, the Tribune reported. Questions abound about the Madigans, and why not? After all, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Madigan's public position could not be more clear. "I'm not the target of anything," he recently told reporters. That statement has the ring of truth, at least from his perspective. If anything is obvious about Madigan's long career in Illinois politics, it's that he has stood, and may well continue to stand, the test of time. Other politicians may go to prison, but he only gets more power, more patronage, and more perks. That's what motivates him, more. But he is, nonetheless, slightly beleaguered. Madigan became the target of rare public criticism from Democrats who've grown tired of having to ask how high whenever he says jump. Consider this recent news story announcing that Madigan had put a serious public relations problem behind him. Lawsuit costs Madigan nearly $900,000. Actually, it didn't cost Madigan a dime to settle a sexual harassment lawsuit a former female campaign operative filed against his political organizations. It cost his many generous donors. Even though Elena Hampton's harassment lawsuit has been settled, the controversy has not. Hampton complained that a top Madigan campaign boss, Kevin Quinn, repeatedly sexually harassed her. When she complained within the organization, Hampton alleged she was blackballed. Eventually, Hampton went public, a move that prompted Madigan to publicly oust Quinn from his campaign team. Privately, however, a close Madigan associate, Michael McLean, was hitting up Madigan's friends for cash payments to Quinn. Those payments also are the subject of the FBI's inquiry, as well as a big source of controversy within the Democratic Party. Sensing Madigan was less than sincere in his condemnation of Quinn, Democratic State Senator Iris Martinez, already at odds with Madigan over an unrelated political dispute, called for Madigan to give up his leadership of the Illinois Democratic Party. Expressing public opposition to Madigan is a major league no-no for Illinois Democrats. Those who do generally end up sleeping with the fishes, politically speaking. Another Madigan problem is his curious relationship with Exelon Commonwealth Edison, which has hired a slew of Madigan friends as lobbyists and has held annual fundraisers for Madigan, where he collects big bucks. A recent news story about the ComEd fundraisers called them command performances, where invitees were essentially required to attend and bring their fat checkbooks with them. The bottom line, as is always in criminal investigations, is whether all this adds up to widespread criminality or widespread politics as usual. For example, Madigan's son doesn't need to sell insurance to municipal officials by pointing out that he's the speaker's son and that things will go better for them in Springfield if they sign on the bottom line. All he has to do is not mention the purple elephant in the corner of the room. In Illinois, people know the score. So where's the crime, and more important, who's going to testify to it? A small army of FBI agents and federal prosecutors are working hard to answer those questions. Crime update. Man accused of running over two in parking lot. A Champaign man who allegedly drove into a crowd in September, seriously injuring two people, is due back in court next month. Derek Overton, 24, whose last known address was in the 2600 block of West Springfield Avenue, was arraigned Wednesday on two counts of aggravated battery, one of which accuses him of leaving a man paralyzed and leaving the scene of a personal injury accident. He was also arraigned for a separate residential burglary and theft that allegedly happened days before. Arrest warrants for Overton in each of those cases had been issued in September. Champaign County Street Crimes Task Force officers, with help from the U.S. Marshals Service, found Overton on Tuesday afternoon in the 100 block of Kenwood Road, Champaign. Assistant State's Attorney Lindsey Clark said in the September 24th melee, the two injured men were part of a group in a parking lot at 2401 West Springfield Avenue near Kenwood Road when a fight broke out. Overton was identified as the man who drove over the lower half of one man, breaking bones that required surgery, and completely running over the other man, leaving him paralyzed. In the residential burglary and theft case, Overton is accused of entering an apartment in the 100 block of Kenwood Road on August 13th and stealing two TVs. Clark said police got video surveillance tape that showed Overton as the intruder. At the time of both alleged crimes, Overton was on probation for an aggravated battery that happened in April. If convicted of residential burglary, the most serious felony of all the counts in both cases, he faces a mandatory prison term of between 4 and 15 years. Conviction for leaving the scene of an injury accident carries penalties ranging from probation to 3 to 7 years in prison. Clark said Overton has another adult traffic conviction for leaving the scene of an accident and juvenile adjudications for burglary and theft. Judge Adam Dill left his bond at a total of $510,000 and appointed the public defender's office to represent him. Dill told him to be back in court January 21st. October home invasion. Champagne man arrested in traffic stop. A Champagne man wanted for a home invasion that led to gunfire in October is in police custody for that as well as for allegedly possessing about 3 ounces of suspected cocaine. Michael A. Rogers, 30, who listed an address in the 1200 block of Paula Drive, was arrested early Wednesday by a Champaign police officer who spotted him speeding on Springfield Avenue. He's expected to appear in court Thursday afternoon. Champaign Police Sergeant Dave Griffith said just before 10 a.m., an officer who was at Springfield and Russell clocked Rogers going 52 in a 35-mile-per-hour zone. The officer began following him and noticed that Rogers made an abrupt left turn onto Draper Avenue. The vehicle eventually stopped at Draper and Green Street, a couple of blocks south of Springfield. Griffith said the officer noted that Rogers appeared nervous and initially gave him a different name. Police had been looking for Rogers since an October 21st home invasion and shooting in the 2300 block of Belmore Drive. In that case, Rogers showed up to the home of a woman he knew and allegedly threatened to harm her. When she wouldn't let him in, he reportedly tried to force his way in, prompting the woman to shoot her gun. Rogers allegedly fired several rounds into her home as he took off. Police said no one has been hit by the bullets. Griffith said when another officer arrived at the traffic stop early Wednesday, he identified the driver as Rogers. A search of Rogers turned up a bag with about 9 grams of cannabis. Police walked along the path that Rogers took after making the turn to the south on Draper and found a plastic bag with both white powdery and chunky substances believed to be almost 3 ounces of suspected cocaine. A passenger with Rogers, who is currently on parole, was also arrested. The state's attorney's office was expected to file additional drug-related charges Thursday against Rogers, who is being held in lieu of $500,000 bond on the case involving home invasion and aggravated discharge of a firearm. The penalty for conviction of home invasion is a mandatory 6 to 30 years in prison. Area update. Rantoul Theater Group has new play and new home. The Rantoul Theater Group is back and has a new home. The group of thespians who staged countless plays over many years at the now-closed Grissom Hall Theater until 2015 held one play at J.W. Ader Junior High the following year. But since then, it's been crickets for the group in Rantoul. That all changed this weekend with a new play and a new permanent home in the old Kessler Building in downtown Rantoul at 112 East Sangamon Avenue. Jessica Holmes will direct Yes, Virginia, based on the famous 1987 New York Sun editorial, is the new title. She said the impetus for getting the band back together came from board member Karen Hughes, who wanted to do a Christmas play. George Papametro, who owns the former Kessler Building, was contacted about using one of the rooms there. Papametro began fixing up a room and won't charge the group for its use for the first play. Starting in January, we will start paying rent and make our home there, Holmes said. Donations have paid to buy seats. Seating capacity is 80 to 90 people. He has really fixed it up, painted it, and put lights in, Holmes said. A woman with the Old Paxton Theater Group is providing a portable stage that, if we move and don't make a go of it, we can pick it up and go with it, Holmes said. Papametro said he has divided the building into 4 sections. The theater will be located in the northwest end. He said he thinks its addition will provide a boost for downtown. One reason I bought the building was I wanted things to get better downtown, he said. I think it will be a great addition. I'm doing everything I can. I want it to stay there, and I want it to last. The cast for Yes, Virginia includes Hughes, Sue Sawyer, Ryan Summers, Cynthia McIntyre, Kennedy Carrico, Monty Joyce, Jim Rich, Michael Soltis, Sophia Swofford, Evelyn Graham, Miranda Isaacs, and Keith Krikovich. The play will be presented at 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday and 2 p.m. Sunday. Village of Thomasville, search on for full-time cop. The village may once again be hiring a chief of police. We're looking to fill a full-time police officer position, basically a chief, Thomasville trustee Robert Pinsky said. We're going to run a posting for probably 30 days to see how folks get on board. We have a couple of candidates we're looking at now, but no decision has been made. Mayor Tyler Evans said there has been discussion of adding a part-time police hours, but we have gathered that might just have to be a full-time officer and may have to be a chief. After employing a part-time police chief for a number of years, the board hired retired Champaign Police Department officer Bob Ray as full-time chief in November 2017. Ray left the position less than 6 months later to take a job with the city of Champaign. Mike Martinez, a part-time Thomasboro patrol officer, was appointed acting part-time chief a month later. He remains in the position. Kirby Medical Center, new scholarship created. Kirby Medical Center and the Kirby Foundation have created a scholarship program for high school seniors and students already enrolled in the healthcare field that could pay up to 100% of tuition, housing, and books. In return, recipients will commit to returning to Kirby Medical Center after graduation to work an amount of time commensurate with the scholarship awarded. The new scholarship is a great way for us to reward talented people for coming to Piatt County after graduation, said Kirby Medical Center CEO Steve Tenhouse. We want to plan for our future by bringing highly qualified caregivers to the community to provide care locally and keep our community strong. New or current students pursuing a career in nursing, radiologic technology, laboratory sciences, family medicine, physical therapy, paramedic studies, or any other healthcare field are eligible to apply via the Kirby website. Recipients will be notified at the end of February of each year. Gibson City Council, loan for restaurateur okayed. City Council members approved creating a Community Development Assistance Program loan for Nicole Miller, who runs Pioletti Spaghetti. The $60,000 15-year loan will be at 3% interest for the first 10 years. Miller will make monthly payments of $414, which is less than she currently pays to rent a commercial kitchen. The CDAP loan will help Miller buy the downtown building at 301 North Sangamon Avenue, which formerly housed the Gibson City Courier office. Seller Matt Barnard will loan her the remaining $20,000 of the $80,000 purchase price. The building has an appraised value of $86,000. Mayor Dan Dickey said CDAP originally focused its loans on job creation, but more recently shifted to aiding in business expansion, since fewer small businesses now hire full-time employees. Miller's business grew 300% from 2018 to 2019 due to starting a take-home meal service. She said she also expects growth in the catering portion of her business, since she is now the preferred vendor for the popular barn wedding venue owned by Chris Engelbrecht of Royal Paxton. Piatt Habitat for Humanity, duplex planned in 2020. Habitat for Humanity of Piatt County did not build a home in 2019, but it didn't just take a year off. We held off because we wanted to do a duplex next year, said Board President Annette Hasinga. There have been meetings, there are new people on the board, so we have been refreshing and renewing. And realistically, we needed two times the amount of money, and that doesn't happen overnight, added Board Member Shelley Crawford Stock. There has been fundraising with $14,000 coming from a wood sales program that has generated about $300,000 for the group's home building efforts over the past 13 years. The local Habitat crew built its first home in 1999 and has put up 14 since it formed. Hasinga can't wait to hand over the keys to a new homeowner. I always get a little choked up each time we go to dedicate the home or even the groundbreaking. Just the fact that our community pulls together to support those in our community who need help, she said. As for the duplex, she said that decision was made because lots the group owns in Monticello, Bemet, and DeLand lend themselves to it. We'll see how it works, she said, noting it will help two families. If we feel it works well, we may do it at other locations that lend themselves to a duplex. Village of Bemet Memorial 5K Run Saturday. The 10th annual Mike Walsh Memorial 5K Run Walk will be held at 9 a.m. Saturday, with proceeds funding a $1,000 scholarship for a student athlete furthering their career at a 2 or 4 year school of their choice. Walsh was a Bemet High School graduate who served on the school board for 10 years, was active with Bemet Athletics Booster Association, and played a key role in introducing a girls' baseball softball program at his alma mater, as well as serving as a volunteer assistant coach. So far, the run has provided improvements within the schools, Chromebooks, and 6 scholarships worth more than $15,000. Around the area, water complaints flood in. Elliot, work toward a new water system cannot come soon enough, trustees acknowledged after complaints that there was more rust than usual in the water and that it smelled of iron. Bourne President Josh Ruley said word on the village's application for an Illinois Rural Water Association grant should come in February. Gifford, the Main Street Water Main Project is moving along with bids set to be solicited in the next few weeks. The project's plans, about 85% complete, are expected to finish before Christmas so they can be reviewed by the Environmental Protection Agency, said David Ashley, team leader of MSA Professional Services. Piper City President Jeff Orr rebutted rumors that the board was blocking a sale of property at the intersection of Illinois 24 and Illinois 115 to Casey's General Store. Orr said he had contacted the listing agent and was assured there had been no offers to date. Rantoul, utility rates will climb next year, but not as much as originally anticipated, due to greater usage in the industrial sector. For customers with all 4 village-operated utilities, water, wastewater, natural gas, and electric, the average monthly total will climb from $175.54 the first year to $192.08 after 5 years. Traveling band headed to San Francisco. All 370 members of Marching Illini to make bowl trip. When the Illini head to the Red Box Bowl later this month, they'll have the full strength of the Marching Illini behind them. The entire band will travel to the San Francisco Bay Area to perform at the December 30th bowl game and pep rally the day before. That's about 370 people in all, with band members and staff, said athletic spokesman Kent Brown. The team will travel to California on December 26th, and the band will arrive 2 days later, he said. Both will return December 31st. The Division of Intercollegiate Athletics will cover the vast majority of the band's travel costs, Brown said. He didn't have an estimate Wednesday, as flights and other details are still being arranged. It's expensive, Brown said. The full band traveled to the team's last bowl game, the Heart of Dallas Bowl, in 2014. But in 2011, only about 50 band members made the trip to the Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl in San Francisco. At the time, athletics officials said the payout to the U of I for that game was about $750,000, and it would have cost about $500,000 to charter a plane for the band and pay for food and lodging, in addition to the travel costs for the football team and staff. In 1999, Marching Illini members voted to travel by bus to Florida rather than fly a smaller group to the MicronPC.com Bowl in Orlando. At this year's bowl game, the band will perform before the game and during halftime, along with the Cal Band. CU Mass Transit District audit shows finances are strong and stable. Ridership also improved slightly in 2019 over 18. The Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District finished its last 2 fiscal years in strong and stable financial shape, according to a recently completed routine audit presented to the MTD Board Wednesday. For both years, state operating assistance grants covered 65% of the MTD's eligible operating expenses, according to representatives from Martin Hood, the Champaign firm that completed the audit. The 2019 fiscal year ended with a slight uptick in ridership, 11,629,163 rides, compared with 2018, which closed with 11,528,385 rides. Ridership in 2018 was 4.7% lower than the previous year, according to the report. Bumping up 2019 ridership was the end of the ongoing Multimodal Corridor Enhancement MCOR construction on Green Street in front of the Illini Union, higher gas prices and higher precipitation in the first half of the year. Those gains were offset by declines in the second half of the year when MCOR construction began on Wright Street in March. In other businesses, the board voted 6-1 to approve a $10.6 million tax levy for the fiscal year that began July 1st and will run through June 30th, 2020, a potential 20% increase over the previous year. A levy increase doesn't translate to higher MTD tax bills for individual taxpayers. The levy is based on the amount of equalized assessed value in the district to which the tax rate is applied. MTD Managing Director Carl Natt said earlier in the tax cycle process, the levy increase is largely a placeholder to be able to collect additional taxes if the two Urbana hospitals become taxable. Board Chair Bradley Deal said that MTD needs to capture as much of the tax base as it can as it becomes available, and more local taxing districts have done likewise. Board Member Phil Fisella cast the only vote against the levy ordinance, saying the property tax burden in Champaign County is already high. Fellow board member Linda Bauer said MTD is a very well-run organization. I support this because I support the MTD, she said. Top spots picked in ballot lottery. Each slip of paper containing a name was folded twice and tossed into a styrofoam hat by Champaign County Clerk Aaron Ammons. He closed his eyes, shook the hat, and pulled out each winning name with a flourish. The winners may have what political candidates have long held to be an advantage come election day, the top spot on the ballot. Ammons conducted the ballot order lottery Wednesday for four races coming up in the March 17, 2020 primaries. In each of those four races, for Champaign County Circuit Clerk and three county board seats, there were two Democratic candidates who came to the clerk's office on the same day at the same time during the filing period to run in the primaries next year. As a result of the lottery, names on the Democratic primary ballot for the following four offices will be listed in this order: Circuit Clerk Robert Burkhalter, followed by Susan McGrath. County Board District 6, Deshaun Williams, then Charles Young. County Board District 8, Geraldo Rosales, then Emily Rodriguez. County Board District 10, Connie Dillard Myers, then Mary King. Chief Deputy County Clerk Angela Patton said candidates often believe the top ballot spot gives them an edge because they assume some people will vote for the candidate listed first on the ballot, and in some cases they may be right. I think it definitely plays a factor because not every voter educates themselves about every race and every candidate, Patton said. States rethinking merit scholarships. State-funded merit scholarships are politically popular, but as college tuition rises, policymakers in some states are starting to rethink financial aid that disproportionately benefits white, wealthy students and often duplicates scholarships awarded by public universities. Lawmakers in Georgia added a need-based grant last year, as did Utah lawmakers this year. Mississippi and Louisiana are locked in long-running debates over how to best spend aid money as costs rise. And Utah may be poised to make a radical step. Last month, the Utah State Board of Regents recommended lawmakers eliminate two merit scholarships, which comprise 90% of annual state financial aid spending, and instead spend 70% of the $20 million budget on grants for students struggling to pay for college. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, December 12, 2019. Please stay tuned for Part 2.